to warn you. You're doomed to stay. Go. Go.
Hey, yo, Michael and Jason and Chucky, get ready. Heather's moving to Elm Street, kicking it with Freddy. Cause Heather loves horror.
What's your favorite scary movie?
You're the man.
Heather loves horror.
Welcome to another fantastic crossover event between the May Queens podcast and Heather Loves Horror. Heather, tell us about the guests we have today.
Today we have Lauren LePray, and he is, you might know him from The Dark Military, which he's working on this on one of the sequels for it right now. Philadelphia Hardcore, COVID 2024, and perhaps some of you might know him from his wrestling career. Today we have Lauren LePray.
Welcome.
Hey, how we doing, everybody? Yes, The Dark Military, always support. Thank you for having me on all these podcasts, any type of show, any publicity for indie filmmaker. Much respect for what you two are doing.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming.
Yes, absolutely.
Now,
I come all the way to my computer. It was really far.
Such long travels. They'll write another movie about it.
Yep.
Now, I want to hear, starting off, about COVID 2024, because insider, you know, information here, a little bit inside baseball. Heather was on COVID 2024 that you wrote and directed and were actually in. So tell me, how did you guys hook up for that?
So right when the pandemic hit, like it happened, I always remember March 11th of last year was the day, to me, it got real, because they were talking about this November, and I was just like, whatever. Then that's the day Tom Hanks got it. And that's the 2 days later was Friday the 13th, March 13th, and Monster Mania, the convention I was going to go to, that the axe came down on that. And then like everything started closing and I'm like, what? I was just like, really? Is this, we're down to this? And I'm like, this will be over within like a month tops. And then like, no. So I was I would do work a real job. I'm not just an independent filmmaker. I live here by myself. This mortgage doesn't pay itself. So, you know, I work out, I go out, I'm doing something. For all that to come down at once, like your gym's gone, yoga's gone, all your film stuff is like postponed. I was like I was just, you know, you're losing it. So I started thinking about how can I do a film? And I was always like, I'll never do a film without proper lighting or audio ever again. And then I started going, I heard some people were doing to do a quarantine film. And I came up with the idea for COVID 2024. I just started thinking in my head, like, what if this doesn't end? What do you do when you're in your house quarantined, whether you're married or you're by yourself? Where does your mind go? So I started pulling up the script with that. And I'm like, well, this will keep me busy for a little bit. So I started realizing then, I'm like, well, I don't want to just have a Zoom movie. Sure, we did shoot on Zoom, but I also want it like camera here. Like, I just wanted to do some cuts. I just wanted like, can I get actors that have their own access, their own equipment? If they could, they could film themselves. And then I'm like, I wrote a script. And I just told the actor, you got to trust me, because I'm trying to fill in what could be interesting around my house. What could what can I do and bring to the table? And I just ran with it. And I started filling in the gaps. I had a good film score for it. I thought I told a good story. And I was looking at parts and I was like, you know, Heather's adorable. I was like writing little parts for smaller people. And I'm like, I could offer Heather this. I think she can knock this out. And she did, you know?
Thank you.
What was it like to be on the film, Heather?
Oh, it was fun. It was exciting. It obviously, it was nothing like I've ever done before. But it was definitely fun, and maybe one day I'll have an opportunity again and do better that time.
Yeah, and I knew Heather also wasn't like, she wasn't seasoned, you know, she's all new to this. And so I was like, I don't know if I had to really direct and work with the girl for a while, but she, I was like, just go through it. I want to hear you and I'll give you any direction. And I was like, I don't really have any notes for this girl. She brought it, you know? So yeah, she was like a natural, you know?
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. Well, how did you hook up with the other people that were in the film then? Because there was a variety of people. It was like a good sized cast.
Oh gosh, it was like Crystal Cleva was from North Carolina, Rhian Nichols in Idaho, you know, Billy Blair's down in Texas. It was just like, I was sitting there, I'm like, well, one thing cool about this is like, I could pull people from all over the country, you know? So all you did was like reach out and be like, yo, you bored? Obviously the answer is yeah, yes. And I'm like, read this. You think you'd want to do this? Plus, some of them, a lot of them had access to their own equipment, you know, so it worked out great. T.L. Westgate down in Tampa. And it was like funny. It was just like, I'm handing the script and I'm like, sort of like, I'm adding stuff. I'm just adding stuff. So when they saw the movie, they're like, where did this character come from? When did this happen? You know, why did this happen? So it was crazy because like with the dark military, which we could switch to whenever you want, but like I shot the majority of the movie. Basically, I shot the movie in 8 days, and after a year of an edit, we went back and added 2 more days of shooting. But, man, you were like, we used every clip. There's no reason I shot extras. So I was like, this movie's going to be a lot shorter if I don't add to it. And so when I did with COVID, I'm like, oh, I got so much I could trim back. And I'm like, man, after the first edit came out, I was like, this is an hour. I was like, I can't have a quarantine movie an hour long that's going to be in the internet. I was just like, no. And I knew I was in a race against time because this was going to be the flavor of the month. And I didn't want my film to be a log jam with everybody else's. So I was on the rush to do it. I think it came out late June. The Indie Brigade, George Romero podcast, but they did the live streaming world premiere for a bit. And, you know, they're great people. So that was a cool, you know, it's all free. If anyone goes to YouTube now, you know, COVID 2024, it pops right up, you know, and you can see what, as a filmmaker, you have to adapt to your environment. And I don't suggest making lots of films like that. Like, you know, I did shoot everything all by myself, setting up a tripod and running back, saying the lines, going back, looking, you're out of focus, dude. You know, you had to come up with stuff like that. But as a filmmaker, adjust to your environment and try not to go overboard.
Absolutely. So you were talking about the filming at your house and if your house was interesting enough. So all that stuff, what we got to see with you, that's this house that you're in right now.
That's what we're sitting out now. We're shooting right the same. I mean, the background change and stuff. But like I always said, people always say, is that really your yard? I'm like, yeah, I'm interesting. I come up like the CBGB's thing. That is real. The outdoor bar I built out of scrap wood. That is real. I was kind of like, people were like, are you shooting all over? Like, no, that's, come on over. I'll show you. You know, so, and you're just trying to show like, you know, some days are better than others. Some days when we're locked in our house, we can keep ourselves so occupied. You're like, that was like nothing. And the next day you're like, I have nothing to do. I'm lost in my mind. I'm going crazy. Like that's what COVID was to me.
Well, I think it also shows you like how people, there's kind of a mental illness thing to it too, because it's not just about people being cooped up in their houses, because I think some people probably do better than others, but like people who have already like issues going on, what happens when you box them in for 4 years plus with no end in sight?
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, you know, especially like, you know, more the ending of like, if everybody has a therapist, and if like, you know, if they think you're good, people are cured out there. So if like, you're not, it was just like, get rid of them. If they try to leave the reservation, AKA their home, it was like, they have to go. So it was like, that's where it came up with those dark endings and stuff. And it's like, people are like, why didn't you like have blood? I was like, because I'm shooting it by myself. I'm like, you wacko. It's like, if I had a team, you know, yeah, I would have got myself all messed up. I'm like, you know, it's like, even like the mirror scene and all that. Like, I just saw a mirror at the side of the road. I'm like, I'm going to add this. That's not what was in the script. I just came up with like, I saw stuff. Yeah, you're coming up with this, anything to be a little bit funny, and like you're piecing it all together. And it's like, it's funny, it's serious, and like, my God, I hope that movie doesn't come through. You know? Yeah, that too, you know. The market is saturated with quarantine feels. Like, I know so many people that are having them coming out. I'm like, yo, the country's like, I'm in Jersey, so we're outside of Philly. Like, we don't have to wear masks as of like 5 days ago. It's like, you're too late to the dance, like, to release these films, like, right now. Like, you got to get in while they're hot. It's kind of like making like a prideful, like, stoner movie. It's like, yo, that's another no-no in Hollywood. It's like, yeah, the market is saturated with them. It's just, it's ridiculous. So you got to know when to strike, and you got to know when to get, it's like the stock market, know when to buy, know when to sell. And I know people are like, oh, I'm going to make a quarantine film. I'm like, there might be no quarantine left, dude. Like, come on, you know?
Hopefully.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't know how, well, I know Texas and Ohio, we're pretty much like open for business at this point. I mean,
didn't their numbers go down?
Yeah.
Everybody was outside in the sun. Yeah. So Florida too. I drove cross country, but in like September, and like, there were like the states that you have to wear a mask. I was like, oh, this is a break, you know? But I was like, they're showing that the country, that we could go on, you know? Like, I thought it was very important to shut down for those few months, but like, I look at, yeah, we're in a pandemic. I just think it's a light, like a light beer of a pandemic. We're just a little bit, I thought we jumped the gun a little bit too much. You know, there's a lot of mom and pop stores that are gone now because of this. It's like, you know, Staples could be open because they're corporate, but the same people selling stuff across the street that are mom and pop, they're gone because they weren't allowed to be open. Like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think if we didn't leave it up to the states too, if we just had like federally, like, here are the rules, it would have just gone by so quick, but we can't get people to agree on things, you know?
Yeah, but they didn't want the hospital. It really came down, they didn't want the hospitals to be so overwhelmed. I totally understand that, but
yeah.
Do we have to get this drastic? Where's the line? You know, depends who's listening. Where's the line, you know?
Yeah. Well, I went to a store, a witchy store, by the way, Heather, locally. I love pagan over here. I love my witchy stores. And we're at the point where it's like, if you're vaccinated and, you know, you can ask the businesses and they may let you take off the mask, but most businesses are like, we still kind of want you to wear the masks unless you're eating or drinking. And I went into my witch shop and I'm like, I'm fully vaccinated. I'm about ready to pull out my card. Do I need it? She's like, take it off. It's fine. I'm like, yes, freedom, taste of freedom. So hopefully this doesn't backfire on us and then COVID 2024 becomes a thing.
Yeah. I'll have to do a sequel where I'm not dead. I'll just have to.
No spoilers. I mean, we spoil everything on the show, but in case you don't want to spoil things, but yeah, that's what happens.
It's always public on YouTube. So yeah, go have fun. But
there you go. Well, okay. So you were talking about, you know, special effects. Why wasn't it so bloody? Dark Military. You got some blood in that movie.
Yeah, and you know what? The Dark Military originally planned was a lot more blood, but anybody who knows film knows how long a scene can take like that. It slows production down. And the whole idea of the Dark Military was to introduce new horror movie icons with high production value. I've seen so many of these $10,000 films where it's like, it's a gore fest. But I can't see it. It's like at night, it's like you didn't light the room and all, you skipped out. So I want to go the other direction, get the name out, you know, market the logo. I mean, they had everything, the music videos. I mean, I did so much marketing for this film. I mean, I just paid it off March 4th of this year. I finally paid off everything I've ever owned in debt. You know, that's how much I went. So like, some people are like, yo, it's not as gory as I wanted to be. I was like, yeah, but you got a high production value. Like those woods were lit, you know, we had sky lifts and everything, shining lights down. I mean, I wanted my film to look just as good as the films we all fell in love with, you know? And when you're on indie budget, you have an excuse. When you're on A-list budget, you've got no excuse. You've got the money, you've got the time, you've got the studios behind it. How many times have we walked out of the major theater and be like, what was that? You know? So, you know, it all builds up for the trilogy. And, you know, my character talks about it the entire film, you know, like, you know, that we're coming back every Halloween to upgrade it. Like, you know, hey, there's a sequel. We have a safety net. The general's sending us back, you know, so.
So is that the plan then for every time? Because, okay, the first one came out, what, 2019? So, okay, we didn't give the sequel in 2020. Are we getting the sequel then this year?
I would love to tell you that I'm going to film The Dark Military this year. That's not happening. I could just let you guys know. No, we're not ready yet. There's some money. There's not all the money. I'm literally rewriting the third act of the film because in case there's any COVID complications, I need to cut some of this, the cast down. I literally at the end had 200 people, like, it was on. Because I'm looking at, you got to raise the bar. Like, you got to raise it every time. And you know, COVID insurance, COVID that had the people come in and clean, like the rules you got to go through now. I'm looking at budget. I'm like, if I could cut some of this down and rewrite this, I could get this third act a lot cheaper. And I also could look at, like, with less cast, I could probably really beef up the gore for the end too. So it's an even trade. You know, it's an even trade what I got. But I'm telling you, for anyone who saw the first movie, how they come back is so I'm sorry, Pat, but it's so good what I came up with. Like how they could come back and making sense of how that could really happen. You know, so it's literally going to be like a hint, like, look at how Devil's House of a Thousand Corpses went one way and Devil's Rejects went a complete other. Like, yo, this is a two different world. That's what happened. Because, like, you know, that's a spoil movie, but it's like they got away with it and they're threatening to come back. Like, the whole United States government waiting, like, go ahead, attempt to come back now that we're ready for you. And they do. And how they do it is like, General always has a plan.
Well, it's like in House of a Thousand Corpses, it's like a Hell House movie. And then it's like, what happens when you take the Hell House?
On the road.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, to me, like, I like the House of a Thousand Corpses, but if you really think about it, they introduced characters, but yeah, it was like kind of been there, done that. The Devil's Rejects, you're like, there's nothing like this. This is a perfect 10 horror film. Like, they don't make films like this. And you know, I don't like attacking other people's work. I just think it's something filmmakers aren't really supposed to do. But like when they did the Three from Hell, I was out the second they announced it because I'm like, you can't top this. Mm-hmm. Like Terminator 2, you're not going to top this. Aliens, you're not going to top this. Like there's only one direction you're going to go. And I'm like, they were shot 20 times each. Like, did you just tell me that? Is that what I heard? Like, I'm just kind of like, moments, but like, everybody knows you can't. Yeah, it's the Devil's Rejects. Like that's where it was at.
And you know what? I liked the beginning. Like the first, like there's two different movies in Three from Hell too. The first half when they're escaping and they're at that house and they're holding that couple hostage and the couple's hostage.
But it was a rerun. That cause it was the same thing as the hotel room scene again. It was just like. I just thought he went back to the well. I don't know. I don't. Rob's awesome as a director, but he has those like, what did you do here, man? He has those films like H2. What did you do here, man? Like you just came off this amazing film. What did you do? So, yeah. Like I don't know. I don't know his mind. I never talked to the guy, so I can't. You know.
Yet you haven't talked to him yet.
Yet.
All right. So with The Dark Military, then. Like, okay, so what is the plan from getting from point two? Do you know already how you're getting from the second one to the third one?
I have an idea for the third one. The thing is, you don't want to write too far ahead. You want to hear what some fans' feedback are and stuff like that. So, like, I kind of knew coming out of the first one where I wanted to go, but, like, I knew the Cook's character was going to be good. I didn't like make people really like Mother Nature. So it's like, you're thinking about like, what are the fans saying? You need to bump these characters forward, you know, even more. So if I was to ever go write it before I even, you know, the first one came out, it's kind of, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. You got to see what the feedback is and everything that. So yeah, the second one, I'm redoing the third act because of COVID. And I also think I could beef up the gore. The third one, I really do have another idea for another, like, wow, we're way over here again, you know, but like, I want to end it with the third one. I want to end it with the third one and be kind of like, why on earth should there be a fourth one? Like, this really, like, why on earth should there be? I've thought about spinoffs of the characters, you know, to kind of, you know, go with that, you know, like I really try to like sell this as a franchise, mm-hmm. you know, and it's endless because there's tons of wacky people on the dark web that the general could pick up and plenty of biblical names that I could keep adding on to it because there's more characters coming.
Jezebel, you know? Is definitely interesting.
Yes, she is. You know, our Delilah, they were, I was very big about like, I wanted a strong female presence and I didn't want either one of them girls to be like wimps in any way. You know, I wanted like, especially Delilah, like she'll hang out with, she can hang with the best of them. She has the physical presence and everything. So, and like, you know, she's a wrestler now after the film in Ring of Honor, you know, and she's doing really good. So, you know, that was after the film, you know, you're just like, this girl can do anything. So, and you know, Jezebel's, yeah, people talk about Jezebel, that's for sure, you know, so her actions was a speaks for herself. She knocked it out of the ballpark. And, you know, I'm happy. I still like when I see the film, I'm like, wow, I did that. You know, like when you first get done into that edit, you don't want to see your film for a year. Like the thought of your own movie makes you vomit. You're like, people go, can we watch your movie? They're like, I'm going outside if you want to watch my movie. I see that thing one more time and I throw up. But, you know, when you revisit, you're just like, wow, I pulled that off. You know, I didn't say it changed cinema or anything, but I, you know, I pulled it off. I'm happy with how it came out. If I was to get my editor and, you know, producer Steve Carino here, I mean, we could stay forever going over like how long it took to like edit these parts. Cause you're just like, oh God, there's no bridge. You know, like what happened to this clip? Like what, you're just like, you can't go back because there's 70 cast members. It was going to, yeah, their appearance changed and like, yeah, like I really went big. Like I always said, my first film, I wouldn't have more than like 10 to 12 men, like casting people, because like you gotta start low and build up. And before I knew it, when I saw this vision, I'm like, you're gonna really do this, huh? Like you're really gonna go. Everything I said I was never gonna do, I did in my first film. So it's out of the way. It's out of the way. You can see the making of that on YouTube as well. And anybody who has the Blu-ray can see everything. Like we really went through the audio commentary and explained like every snag that everything we could fit in that, you know, within that audio commentary. But we break it down. Like Steve Gray and I, we really shut our lives down for this. It was nuts. I remember we started editing July 3rd of the next year because he bought a house. And like he's my editor, and like we'd get him settled after all that time. So it's like, hey, summer's here. And I'm just looking out the window at all the kids playing. I'm like, and we're stuck inside. This is our life for a while, you know? And it was. I mean, it was just work, sleep for an hour, his house, repeat. That's all it was. Bad food.
Passion project.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you got everybody like, when's it coming out? That's all this way. When's it coming out? When's it coming out? You're like, you have no idea. You got no idea how long it's taking. I mean, sometimes it's like, you got 8 seconds done, you know, at the end of the night, because you have to go through all that footage and find it and like how we can piece it together. And like, what is this file corrupt? You're just like, oh, Jesus, you know? So, and then other nights you're like, oh, shit, we got 4 minutes done. That's pretty good. We're on our way. And then, you know, you didn't get 4 minutes definitely the next time. So,
You were talking about funding and you know, you're still trying to come up with the rest of the funding for part two. Is there any way that, you know, people listening, if they wanted to contribute, is there any way they can contribute? Do your Blu-ray sales help with that? Is there a Patreon page or whatever filmmakers are
doing? So as far as the fans, and I have had fans hit me up saying they want to contribute, when I ring the bell, and I will at one point, I'll do a lot of hype before it. There'll definitely be some amazing perks, like we're really trying to go above and beyond. But I can tell you, like, I'm not ready for that. Like, I would never want to take fans' money and then just be like, have them hound me, like, when are you starting this thing? Like, I'm not ready to start it. You follow? So like, once I promise you something, it's on my back. It just is. It's just like, I cannot shake it. So I can't be like, oh, the money's just sitting in the bank, right? You know, I can't do it. I won't ask for it till, because when my life shuts down, it shuts down. Like, I can't. I tried it during the day at it. Like, hey, Van Halen's playing tonight. And I went to Van Halen for 20 minutes. And I'm like, this is great. I'm away from the computer. This is awesome. I'm not enjoying this because I know I'm supposed to be home editing. Like your whole life is just gone. Like, yeah, you know, even that hour you got out, I'm like, I'm not, I'm leaving Van Halen. That was the last time I saw him before Eddie died. You know, it's crazy, you know, but that's how your life is. Like, I got to get out of this chair. So it's like a double standard. You got up for an hour, but you're like, I got to get back here. So
yeah,
it consumes you. It's literally, I call like an editing is like, you know, Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Like, you can't leave. You can't leave the Overlook. You can't leave the editing station. You can't. It's like, it becomes your life.
Absolutely. I'm editing our podcasts and I'm like, on top of my own things that I'm doing for YouTube. And I'm like, yeah, I'm here for hours on end. 12 hours go by, my ankles are starting to swell. I'm like, maybe I should get up and, you know, walk around a little bit.
I always tell people, if you're feeling like you're rushing the clips, get out of that chair. You know, go there. I can't tell you how many times when we were doing The Dark Military, it's just like we had this flow and it's just like, yeah, it's supper time. And then you leave for 45 minutes and you come back and you're like, hit play, let's see what we got. And like, we'll just stop and we'll like look at each other and be like, no. Just like that work we did, like we convinced ourselves it looked good, but we're like, no. Then you gotta break that back open, you know, and you're like, oh God, you know, but so you have to always constantly like go back. Like we get far ahead, then we'd go back and just be like, it's been a while. And then sometimes you're like, hells yeah, we got that. No, we got that. And other times you're like, what were we thinking? What were we thinking with this scene? Like, no, like yeah, we can break that back open. So you have to be your worst critic, because if not, you know, the fans are going to come get you. You're not getting by anything. Mm. You know?
Good advice. Definitely good advice. Now, I want to talk about Terrifier 2, but before we get there, I want to make sure, Heather, do you have any questions about Dark Military, about COVID 2024, anything?
No, I'm just observing.
She's the horror police. She's taking notes. I want to know my grade at the end of this.
I just want to make sure. I dominate conversations and I don't mean to, but I just want to make sure, you know, that I give Heather every opportunity to say whatever she wants to say. Because I know she loves Dark Military too. She was very excited to talk about this and about the sequel. So yeah.
Heather's a great human.
Oh, absolutely.
Both of you.
All right, then let's talk about Terrifier 2, because I saw that you are playing a role in this movie, the DJ. One, do you actually have DJing skills, or did you learn for this movie?
No, but I did work at a concert hall for like 15 years, and you know, it's not hard. To top it all off, like when you're doing all that, like if they don't hit your hands and you get them low, and you're just, if you, like, you can't even tell like what anybody's doing. There's a lot of ways around it, but. No, I was actually with Damien and Mike Levy last weekend at Monster Mania, catching up with them. But as far as that goes, I mean, my part's like very tiny and all that. But the success of the Dark Military led me to them, because I was doing a show. I think kind of pretty much done with COVID, but I was doing a show up at Princeton College where I was Adam Bierman's co-host. And when I got wind of like Terrifier, because every time I was like in every horror group, I'm like, that damn clown again. What's going on? That clown. So I finally started like looking into it. Like, is this actually a good movie? You know, like I was just missing it, because I was in the middle of the Dark Military edit. So I was just missing everything. So I realized, like, okay, who's playing the clown? David. And then I was like, who's the director? Damien. So, you know, I friended them all and they took it in 2 seconds. But I'm like, I'm looking at all their posts. So I was like, no disrespect to David's really good at being on any podcast. He's great. But I was looking at some of the like podcasts he was doing, like all choppy and stuff. And I'm like, I should get him on my Princeton show. I'm like, well, there's only one way to find out. I just reached out and he got back to me in a second. I sent him a scissor reel of my show. And he's just like, I do that shit. So that opened up the whole foundation. And then I got Damien on with David for the second show. So it turned out me and Damien, you know, we bonded really good. A lot of respect, and I love that, like, Terrifier is so organic, you know. I was just like, wow, like, this, the fans, it's like, yo, here's another micro-budget film. It's a lot of heart, and it just was it just turned into the juggernaut that it did. So when the sequel kit was, I knew he was making a sequel. I was like, yo, Damien, you know I'm in that, right? Like, I didn't ask. I was just like, yo, I'm in that, right? So, and then I said also, like, I go, I'm not going to be one of those people to say that. I was like, is there anything I could do for you? And he's like, well, I need locations. And I was like, tell me what you need. So the final scene in Terrifier 2, I just said, listen, I was like, you guys are in New York. I'm Jersey, but basically 5 minutes from Philly. I was like, the locations I could get you was in Philly. I'm not driving up to New York for you. I was like, so they said they needed a haunted house for the last scene. So like literally, I think they filmed 20 days in Philadelphia. So the final scene, and I do know exactly how it ends, and I'm giving no hints at all. I was there for it. But yeah, it took place at the Fright Factory in Philadelphia. So that was a great time. You know what was crazy about that too? That was the last month before the shutdown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like literally like I felt like I lost everything. Like, yeah, you get that family environment, you're in film and all that. I mean, I was still going to work every day and going down there. And it's not like I was needed. I'm not in that scene at all. My scene's in New Jersey up at a club, QXTs. So, you know, that's my role. But like, I was like, wow, dude, wow. I'm seeing part of it. I know they filmed over 60 days, but I could say I was at 1/4 of it. I was like, you know, when the history written book, I was like, I saw 1/4 of that movie being, you know, filmed. So, you know, that's how you work. And like, you have to have your head screwed on straight. I always tell filmmakers, you have to have proof of who you are, because everybody could try to write Kane Hodder or Robert Englund all day. You can try to do that. But like, your work ethic has to show who you are. You've got to show proof and, you know, respectable work. You know, that's how I got to that. Like, you know, went in with that click, you know?
And that's why you're going to meet Rob Zombie at some point.
That's the plan. That is the plan. So I want to meet everybody, you know, I want to work with everybody. I'd love to be eventually earn the right to be a guest at conventions. You know, that's what I want to earn. And I also don't want to be a guy. I want them to come to me. I don't want to be a guy calling conventions, because I've seen those people that get into conventions and no one's at their table. Like, that's like a nightmare. Like, you get in, but it's like, yo, you oversold yourself. You didn't earn it. You know, they'll call you when you earned it. So, you know, that's where I'm building towards, you know, the public figure and everything too. You know, I'd love to be like hanging out with horror movie fans every weekend at conventions, because anyone who's been to conventions know how awesome it is.
Right.
You know, but I want it earned, you know.
With that, I don't know if you could say this without spoiling anything, but you know, maybe blink once, yes, twice for no. The way that Terrifier 2 ends, is there going to be a Terrifier 3?
I could just tell you that, because Damien's always talked about like making a bunch of sequels to it. So.
Okay. Yay.
No hints about how. I mean, I'm not, yeah. It's kind of funny. I actually didn't read the script. So it's like when I actually see the movie for the first time, I'm seeing it blank. Like, obviously I know things that happen, but like, I never officially read the script. So I just could just brag and say, hey, oh, I know how it ends, but no, I don't know. I don't even know the whole movie. So well, I kind of like that. I think if Damien was to send me the script, I wouldn't read it. I'd rather go in, because it's like, especially as I'm in it, I'm also, you know, you don't want to lose your fandom either. So, you know, I want to see it just like everybody else, you know?
Yeah. It's good to be surprised whenever you can.
Yeah, it is. Anytime there's something new too, like, you're just like, you know, cool. Cause like, a lot of horror movies are recycled movies. That's like, even The Dark Military has that, you know, I'm not the first hunting movie, Human Hunt, that's been around forever. But like, from the dark web, and you know, why are they doing it? And you know, I had my own spice to it, but like, yeah, you're trying to always, I'm always think it's good to try to bring new characters that hopefully the fans could, you know, adapt to. Because there's just like, when Terrifier hit, here came all the clown movies, you know, when Paranoia Challenge hit, or Paranoia Activity hit, here came all those movies. And then Exorcist this, and Shark this, and Shark. It's just like everybody could sometimes jumps on it, and I think wears things out. I like when something new, and as much as like Art the Clown, like, hey, obviously he's not Pennywise. Pennywise would be the old, but yeah, your killer clowns, and like Art's just different because he doesn't talk. It's just such a different creep. It's just a creep, really extra creepy. And I like, I always said, David's got the best freaking role because he's got no lines. It's the best thing in the world. You know, it really is.
I thought his character was so fascinating too, because, you know, without any lines at all, you have no idea what he's going to do, because he looks like your typical slasher type dude. But then all of a sudden some victim comes up to him and he shoots the person out of nowhere. Like, where the hell did he get a gun? This just blew my mind. And it just kept me like on edge the entire movie. So I'm excited to see the sequel.
Yeah, it makes two of us. It should. Damon's really, I'm just quoting Danny. Damon's like telling everyone it'll be out by Halloween, like wherever it lands. You know, that'd be a shame, you know, if it didn't. But I think Damon will, they'll make it happen. I can't tell you what's going to happen to the film. I'm not part of that Jedi Council at the table for that. So I do hope to see it now that the edit's like done. Like Danny put a post out. You know, I was like, yo, I want to come over and watch that with you. Okay. So, you know, but you know, it's good for all those guys. They're all great people. And Lauren Rivera and like Elliot, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's gonna be a lot of names coming out of this. You know, this is making new icons out of this for sure.
Nice. I noticed that in your mural, your CBGB mural, in the very corner, you've got Art the Clown.
Yes. I also have myself. I also have Annabelle. I also have the killer in Hellfest and the Nun. So I kind of made like the newer people. Of course, I'm going to include myself. But I have that there. So it's like literally outside the gate, they greet you. And then you come in. There's the whole 77 explosion. I have to always say Haley Crystal, the guy that owns CBGBs, is right there kind of like greeting you because that's how it was. And then on the other side of the ladder, it's kind of like another divider. And there's like Prince, Tina Turner, Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, like Leonard Cohen, kind of like, you know, the indie guys. I've changed that mural like 3 or 4 times, but like that one stays forever because like so many people pop over that. And like, I wake up every day and I look out, I'm like, I really did that. I really had that done. This is really my property. I pay taxes for this shit. So yeah, I don't like boringness. You know, I always change the inside of my house every couple of years. Like I come up with stuff. So
nice. Wait, okay, so did you have somebody paint the mural for you, or is that like your hand?
Mike Merle, he plays in this band called Sunburster. He's a school teacher too, so he would stop after school and do a little bit every. I just give him the idea and he'd go. I mean, I did my basement up and stuff. You know, I got Leatherface down there, and you know, Dr. Manhattan. I got like a whole bunch of cool stuff. You know, Marv from Sin City. Like, I just don't like boring rooms. It's just always. I always hate it when I walk in someone's house and like all their walls are white, and I'm like, wow, there's something hard to keep clean. Like. You touch the wall once, there's like fingerprints. You're like, no. So that, you know.
That's me. I'm like, I need surfaces that I don't have to clean 24/7. For the love of God, please.
Yeah.
After a kid, though, it's like nonstop cleaning.
Yeah, you're in hell. That's right. It's beautiful, though. Yeah.
All right. So since we're on the subject of CBGBs and music and stuff, your documentary, Philadelphia Hardcore. How did you get into making that?
You guys could watch that film, Pennsylvania Hardcore. But you can watch that for free on Tubi and MoviePlex and Amazon right now. So I've been a part of the Pennsylvania Hardcore scene since 1993. That was kind of like, you know, my late teen years. And I was just a really sheltered kid that was really quiet. And I found this punk rock movement. And that broke me out of my shell, along with anyone ever saw my arm, like all my martial arts school. I joined them at the same time. And at the same time, I always said that's when I started talking, because that's how quiet I was. And I just found who I was, found the people I was at, found the music I was at. And I just remember in 1995, this New York hardcore documentary came out. And I was like, man, imagine if they ever did one on Pennsylvania. Like, that'd be the coolest thing ever. So 2010 is when I my born on date the film, and I started my own company around 2012. And just my friend Mike Gavlik came up at a show. He's like, "Why don't you do a documentary about Pennsylvania hardcore?" And I was like, "No." I walked away, and it just started. I started piecing it together, and then went back. I'm like, good idea. I'm gonna do it." and then I just got cameras, and I made my list, and then the list got bigger and bigger because there's like, well, if you're gonna do that, you gotta talk to this guy. You gotta find this person, and you gotta find this girl, and you gotta do this, and you know. So I'm the first person to cover an entire state. So Philadelphia is in it, but like I went from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh and everywhere in between, like Hickville, everything. And I did exactly 200 interviews on the nose. And 17 of them got cut because either their file wasn't too good or just I just didn't feel it. I almost felt like they're deer in the headlights talking. I was like, "Yeah, dude, you don't want to be in this film." You know, so, but the whole scene came together, and I was like, anyone who told me about a band or a person, I'm like, "I don't know them. You're getting a hold of them for me. You know, you smoke it. You're going to make it happen. I'll film them." So I went 5 months of interviews, 5 months of editing with that, which was a walk in the ballpark compared to what I did with Dark Military. Even though I shot the film in 8 days, the edit in the Dark Military was like a lot of films, just a nightmare where, you know, because there's multiple angles, multiple things going on. When you're doing a documentary, it's just straight ahead, film. What'd they say? You know, like, all right, write that down. Which sections does that go in? You know, so that was my first film. I'm heavily drawn to go back to actually documentaries because they're inexpensive and there's no loss. The Dark Military or any other idea I have, you're trying to get the best production value. And you also got to tell these producers, don't put in what you're not afraid to lose. Because like I said, again, the Amazon penny, it's not exactly, it's so hard to flip these days, guys. Like even like when you say like Justice League, the new Justice League that came out, which is a masterpiece film. My gosh, I'm so happy they let Zack Snyder do that. But I noticed like Ben Affleck, he was one of the producers on it. And I'm looking at like, it's a paid service. Why is Ben Affleck getting like any money back? Like, why is he even paying? And it turns out like stuff like that is like almost like stock in the company. Mm-hmm. Same thing with anybody who's doing something for Netflix. Like, okay, you are signed to make multiple films for our network only, original content. So that's stock in the company. That's good for Zack Snyder and Ben Affleck. For this guy who lives outside of Philly, like we got pushed further down the conveyor belt. Mm-hmm. We just did. We got pushed down intellectual property, like the Dark Military logo that I have. I'm always pushing the tag, but like the T-shirts, the glasses, like anything that you got. That's what me and all the filmmakers are trying to make money on. Obviously DVD sales too. Usually the distribution company want your film for streaming. Like that's just where they're gonna, and then they're gonna lie to you and do all this expenses that you're not allowed to see without sicking your lawyer on them. And if you sick your lawyer on them, they got bigger lawyers. Unless you have just so much money to piss away, that you're never gonna see these numbers. Yeah, you know, they'll find a way of like, "Oh, you lost this month. We put money here for marketing. Let me see here. Right. I don't see it. Could you just show me what it did?" No. Send your lawyer after us. Like that's because they know, you know, as I said earlier, I work a real world job. You know, like that's the mortgage. You know, I live here by myself. How much money do I have for a lawyer to chase down these distribution companies? That's why, like, I got my film lucky enough on Film Hub, you know, so they pick from all that. But like Film Hub does not market your film. I do. So I have to pay for ads. And, you know, and that's where I come thankful for all the fans that are, you know, following your show and all that. Like, this is how you got to do it, folks. And, you know, Facebook ads and, you know, anything you get, fly, go to a horror convention, get your flyers out, you know, get your little pay, get them down there, you know, this cast member's going there. Like, yo, take some of these with you. Like you gotta, it's hard buying YouTube ads, you know, like click off in 5 seconds. Yeah. You gotta buy those things too and hope someone watches your trailer, you know, just cause everybody's used to like, I don't want to spend the extra money. And then their film never leaves their city. It's like, I couldn't go for that. You know, I literally went on the road to every convention, like, why the movie is being edited, and like, there's flyers, there's free t-shirts, there's stickers, you know, please follow us, you know, just follow me on Facebook, you got to build an audience. And there's so many people, it's like, oh, I'm going to make a Facebook page and a YouTube trailer and they're done. And I'm like, no, you're not done. And by the way, there's a reason Facebook, you don't see people's pages, because they want you to pay. That's how Facebook makes their money. They make you pay for that thing to go to, because otherwise if everybody saw whatever, their artwork, their movie, their band page, Facebook would make no money. That's why they're like the seventh biggest company in the world, because like you have to pay. They're like, oh, did you see my fan page? No, I didn't, because Facebook's not allowing me to see it, you know? So it's a rough world, guys. I mean, it's rough because it's just a tons of output of pay, and you get that month, that quarterly check, and you're just like, oh, this is awesome. Like, like for how much I put out? No, it's not awesome, you know, but some months are better than others, but.
Well, let's try to beat that algorithm. Where can people follow you, see your stuff? What websites do you got set up? Plug it all, just plug it all.
Okay, so between the Dark Military and all my film festivals and everything I've ever been in, I run Average Superstar Films, averagesuperstarfilms.com. I have like 53 pages of everything I've ever done, even from my old wrestling days, everything's in there. I always tell everybody, if you got a website, you have to have it updated. Don't hand someone a card and be like, my website hasn't been updated in 2 years. I will hand the card back to you because it shows you're not caring. You're not keeping up with your own. You already told me you're an F up, but please do that. You can check me out at Lauren W. Leprey on Instagram and Facebook. Hit me up on like direct IM. That's the best, seriously, one of the best ways to get a hold of me. Dark Military pages are on the same thing. I realize there's TikTok and, you know, WhatsApp. I every time you turn around, there's a new app. I can't keep up with it. But so it's Average Superstar Films and Lauren Leprey at, you know, Instagram and Facebook. It's the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. You were mentioning your wrestling days. I feel like we have a common friend on Instagram, Heather and I. She goes by Scary Godmother, and she is very much adamant that there's a connection between horror movie fans and wrestling fans. And I know
a black t-shirt.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
It's probably the black t-shirt.
I think it's the costumes and the fake blood.
Yeah,
I was lost in that when I was a youth. Like that was it. It was like wrestling. You know, all I said I wanted to do when I grew up, I was like, I want to play for the Philadelphia Phillies and I want to be a wrestler. Well, I didn't work out for the Philadelphia Phillies, but I did. I was involved with 54 wrestling matches. So I was around. I lived 10 minutes from the old ECW arena. So that's really what brought me to Philadelphia. I was working behind the scenes, helping one of the promoters that was hired for ECW. So that was kind of like my connection. And then I worked independents around here. So like I was around for a good, more than half of the ECW era. I saw like all of it. So, you know, I was behind the scenes. So it was a great time. And that came crashing down because when ECW folded and WCW folded, they're like, oh my God, there's like 300 wrestlers on the market. And like, I was basically a manager. I've wrestled and I've been involved all types of angles and stuff, but I'm just a manager in the world where the female valet is dominant. Like I was basically obsolete. And so by 2004, I was gone. It was this, I lost passion for it. It really was like the indies, you know, I always look back now like, shit, you know, you regret it? Yeah, no. Because it does, really. It's best way I can, yeah, no, because I do miss it. But like, I haven't seen like AEW, Ring of Honor, or Raw. Oh my God, I haven't seen that. Like if you were to put it on now, like I guarantee I wouldn't know. Unless they were old head, I wouldn't know who these people were, you know? I did work some shows with CM Punk. I remember in my day before he was big, you know. Wow. Sometimes you're just like, wow, yeah, for all that. So yeah, so it's like, oh, look, he got through, you know, good for him. I root for it. It's like, I root for everybody. Good for, you know, whoever got through, even if we weren't getting along at certain times, like good for you. You know, I like seeing people, you know, I like seeing people win. Even if I don't like it, like if you earned it, good for you. That's what I'd say, you know, right. In life, you know, so wrestling was, but when I dropped it, but like I did have like the Blue Meanie and the Dark Military and, I mean, he's gone now, but like I had a part for New Jack. It just didn't work out, you know. You know, he passed away a couple of weeks ago. So,
oh.
Yeah. And it's funny because the only other guy I really talked to from there was like Vic Grimes, and New Jack and Vic Grimes had their beef. So, in real life. So, yeah, it's crazy how that works out. But, you know, I actually feel, when you say ECW, I feel very bad. As far as how many people are gone, died from all those head injuries. And I was one of those people at one point cheering that, like not knowing the head trauma, but like almost everybody was constantly getting hit in the head, but they're gone now. Like it's a real deal. You know, you're cheering them on Friday night, getting smacked in the head, and then they're going to go back out there Saturday, get smacked in the head like that again. It was crazy because when I first got smacked in the head, I'm just used to watching these guys eat it, no problem. I got smacked in the head. I was like, oh my God, there's a flash. Like, it's like, oh my God. Why is it not hurting them, you know? But yeah, there's a big reality check when you hop on the other side of the fence. So in my YouTube channel, Average Superstar TV, between like the Dark Military, my film, you can watch some of my old wrestling matches up in there too. There's more coming and stuff, but or just my manager, my stupid interviews, whatever, but like they're all available up there. Yeah, so I get you subscribers at Average Superstar TV on YouTube. There's literally like 300 videos because I also have the Pennsylvania Hardcore full interviews of everybody I did in there. So
nice. Make
the Dark Military, like all that stuff. So, but yeah, but it's weird how something you cared but so diehard is like so off your radar now. It is. But also, I'm so into film. Like, how can I do both?
Exactly. You grow and you evolved, and this is what you have evolved to. And yep. You might do more documentaries, too. So that's even more evolving.
Oh, I'm all about it. Like, I'm just trying to look at the next documentary I do. I need to have that passion for it. Like, I don't want to just pick something and be like, no. Like, it's got to be like, like, yes, I can do that. I'm going after it. So
do you think it'll be, like, do you have an idea of the kind of range, like the topics that you would pick up? Like, would it be music? Would it be other independent filmmakers? Like, would you?
I've had ideas for both. Yeah. It's just kind of like, you also have to look at like, do I got to go around the country to do some of this? You know, like in budget and all that. Pennsylvania Hardcore, yeah, I had to travel, but I still kind of hung in Pennsylvania, you know, like nice the Pittsburgh trip, you know, and Erie and all that. But so you got to look at that too. What's going to be easy on you, but also like, again, like I haven't really hit that topic yet. I've had ideas, like you're saying, of like, I'll know when it hits, because the door opens, same with Dark Military, like the obsession door, it opens. Like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to unlock in my mind. So if my heart's not there, it's almost the answer is like, no, don't do that, because that's not you. So I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for that click, you know.
That spark.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it, you know, surround me. I just got to wait for it, you know, because it was dead for a while. It was last year, you know. There's so many filmmakers telling me, oh, I got this going. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't. There's no proof of it at all. There's no pictures. You're not filming it. You're just trying to hype yourself. I hate when people can't just be like, yo, this sucks right now. And I don't have anything going on. Like, I just hate that. Just say it. Say it for a bit. It's okay. That doesn't get defined who you are as a filmmaker. It just means, Joe, you're grounded for a little bit.
Yeah. That's great advice. That's awesome advice for people who are in that slowdown right now. So, well, thank you for joining us. Heather, do you have any questions before we let him go?
No, I just, you know, want to thank you for always being so insightful and sharing your perspective. You have loads of good advice to give, so thank you.
Thank you. You ever want me back on, whatever, round table or whatever, I'm there. You got me.
You always
anytime you need that. I expect to see that hat every time.
I will keep it. I might get more hats. More. I got this at Spirit Halloween last year. Last year, because I went during quarantine. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go and get some Halloween stuff. So I might get more hats this year.
Go for it.
All right. Well, everybody who listened, thank you so much. Please check out The Dark Military for free on Tubi and Pennsylvania Hardcore and Dark Military free on Movieplex, Tubi, and Amazon. So I know we need things to watch these days. So do it up.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you so much. You guys have a good night.
You too. We're going to close things out and let you go.
All right. Sounds great.
Oh, man. Well, lots of really great insight about being a filmmaker. Like, I know I want to get into filmmaking. Right now, I'm just thinking like YouTube wise and like, you know, if I make money, you know, YouTube, the small amount you can make from YouTube when you have enough subscribers and stuff, but it's still like a huge thing just to claw your way up for that once you get started. But then there's, you know, sponsorships and stuff that you can get when you're a YouTuber that you don't have to rely on YouTube. But when you're just an independent filmmaker, it's a real grind. So people have to really consider that before they get into it. But I do love his spirit about like, I want to go to conventions. And when I go, I connect with this person. I really do think he's going to connect with Rob Zombie one day. And we're the ones that predicted it.
Or you laugh. All three of them.
Exactly. We'll meet up with Eli Roth. He'll meet up with Rob Zombie. And then we'll just all meet up together one day and make a movie.
We'll just have our own episode on History of Terror. I mean, horror. Oh my God.
Honestly, I've been tweeting the guys from, I don't even know if it's guys or girls, whatever, the people who run the 80s horror doc Twitter account that did the In Search of Darkness movies. I tweet them every so often and I'm like, you gotta talk about this movie. You gotta talk about this movie. And I'm like, I hope I'm like enough of an expert at that point that maybe one day they'll ask me to talk about the movies I'm suggesting. And I swear, if they don't have Spookies in part 3 and have Darcy the Male Girl, Diana Prince, talking about it, I'm gonna be upset. Because I know she loves that movie. I knew it before they showed it on Joe Bob last week, which was awesome, and you have to watch it. And I knew she was a fan. And I'm like, this is, like, she's been on those documentaries before. I think it would be a really shame, a big shame, if they didn't pair up that movie, which now has Joe Bob behind it, even though he hated it. It's still part of the oeuvre of The Last Drive-In. Pair that movie up with Diana Prince. That's a real missed opportunity right there. So just hope it.
I agree.
If you ever want me to come interview guys, you know, just I'm right here. So. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another fantastic crossover event between the May Queens podcast and Heather Loves Horror. It's getting loud in my neighborhood. Like motorcycles and shit are happening. I don't know. I hope you can't hear a lot of it on the microphone, but I'm guessing like right now. Here comes one. They're not too loud. They're sometimes louder. But it's Memorial Day. It is actually Memorial Day filming this, not Memorial Day weekend or whatever. And there have been parties up and down my street, cars blocking the road. It's ridiculous right now. So I'm just surprised it's not louder. But there have been times during that interview where I heard like loud music blasting. I'm like, please don't let this interrupt what he's saying. My eyes starting to twitch from the stress. Podcast life, I tell you. All right. Heather, what do you have coming up?
Just what we've discussed and things that we're working on. And then, like, I have a few people that I want to try and, you know, ask to do some work with us. So I'm just kind of doing that. I don't want to, like, overdo anything because at one point I was. And I wasn't getting good rest, and I feel like I could be all there, you know. So I'm just trying to do that. But whenever we do something, I want it to be fun.
That's gonna be me over the next month, not because of this, but I'm taking a music production class online, this website called Monthly that I've been seeing all these ads for. They are offering a class that's being run, and by run I mean it's pre-made videos, but I think the guy drops in every once in a while to check your work, run by Ryan Tedder, who's the lead singer of One Republic. And he also wrote songs for Beyonce. He wrote Halo for Beyonce. And I'm Already Gone for Kelly Clarkson, which, if you know, the running joke is that those songs are exactly the same because they were written by the same dude, just different lyrics and different voices. But he's running this music production class that lasts 30 days. And day one is actually today. So as soon as I'm done filming this, I'm going to go take my first lesson for the day. Then hopefully, you know, I'll have more confidence to get the horror hymns going that I want to get going. Cause I want to, you know, be a better song producer, and the stuff I make moving forward, I'd like to be good quality to put on streaming and revisit the songs I've already put out and reproduce those too for streaming. So that's some projects I got going on. Terra Tuesdays. I watched last night and filmed, and it will come out tomorrow, which is a week and a half before this episode comes out. Psycho Gore Man, and it's fucking hilarious, and it's a very much what the fuck did I just watch movie. So look out for that, and that's it for me. So that's it, Heather. Another great end to another podcast. I will talk to you later.
All right, you have a good one.
Bye.